and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network and Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, make that 36 plus years now of radio presence, often imitated, but never duplicated. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, Ring Talk airs Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific. I'm live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, the Dan Patrick Channel, Channel 211, of course, SB Nation Sports, like 1,000 other internet platforms. Bottom line is, if you listen to us live, thank you so much for tuning in. If you listen to us as part of the podcast, right on you, that's happening too. Straight up, we're talking boxing and MMA for the next 2 hours. Of course, we'll bring in the retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant, in a few minutes. And, you know, I'll ask Larry about the chemistry between him and some of the guys that he worked with. I mean, who were jerks? Who were the nice guys? I mean, he had a lot of broadcast partners. George Foreman, Sugar Ray Leonard, Harold Letterman, Jim Lampley. I keep Barry Tompkins. I keep going and going. But the bottom line is, who did he work with best? Of course, I'm talking about the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Hall of Famer, Larry Merchant, who should be here in about 10 minutes here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We'll also talk about the pimp of MMA. I'm talking about Mr. Dana White. Of course, that's my opinion, but straight up, I think he's El Pimpo. We'll talk about him and a distribution of the wealth. Of course, the UFC now is sort of copping, saying, well, maybe we're giving 18% of the dollar to the fighters. Well, guess what? In the NFL and the NBA, the players get a lot more than 18 cents on the dollar, and they're not going out there and having death matches week after week. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, the studio text line. Hit it up if you want, 415-275-1613. Once again, the studio text line, 415-275-1613. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization. Grandpa Munster, what a character he was. If you ever had a chance to go by his restaurant in New York City, and just watch him for a couple of minutes, as animated as he was, Al Lewis was one hell of a restaurateur, no doubt about that. The food, well, let's not brag about the food, but Grandpa was cool. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking in the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, boxing taking place across the pond in Europe. Germany had a card this week. More power to them. Not any big names on that card. Of course, Poland had a card as well. And then, of course, Jesse Magdalena came back, the former world champion, now 28-1, 18 wax, a 10-round DQ winner of Yanivel Vicente, now 36-5, a couple of draws and 28 wax. But that was Thursday night's fight on ESPN at the Bubble. And, of course, that's the Bubble at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, where these audience-less crowds are watching a boxing card. Now, there's like four or five people in the crowd. More power to them. I guess it's working out. The virus is not spreading and boxing is happening. But this isn't really boxing. I'll get to that in just a second. Of course, Tuesday night, the kickoff of this, the ESPN card, of course, brought us Shakur Stevenson, 2016, Olympic silver medalist, unbeaten 16-0, current WBO 126-pound champion. I mean, he's really a prospect to watch. There's no doubt about it. He can dig with both hands. He's the real deal. I mean, he is the real deal. Okay. But he's fighting guys, even though Felix Caraballo came in at 13-1 with a couple of draws in 19-9 wax. People say, well, that's a formidable record. Yeah, but you know what? He's an exceptional fighter, and we really don't want to see exceptional fighters against formidable guys. We want to see exceptional guys against guys that can test them, guys that can push them. And evidently, this was nowhere near a push. Stevenson now 14 and zip, 8 KOs, knocked out Felix Caraballo in the sixth round for a non-title fight. Of course, a super featherweight bout by fighting at 130 pounds. The real money is going to be at 135, no doubt about that. Of course, I'm talking about Gervonta Davis, Teofimo Lopez, of course, the current world ranked champion. I'm talking about Vasyl Lomachenko. I can keep going and going, but Devon Haney, of course, the internet champion, Teofimo Lopez, dubbed him the Instagram champion. Ryan Garcia is out there at 135 pounds. This is probably the greatest division as far as talent and personality is concerned in boxing right now. But unfortunately, boxing's on the, you know, the sidelines because you can't get an arena. You can't book an arena. Canelo Alvarez, according to my upcoming guest, I believe Larry Merchant, he said that Canelo is going to be ready to do a studio fight if need be. More power to him, of course. For $35 million, I do a studio fight too. Godfather, how are you this morning?
I'm splendid. I did something I never did before. I had a haircut, but outside in the back of the house.
and Patricia did it?
No, I have a guy. An amazing character who lives down the coast, and he's been cutting my hair for, I don't know, since I was an infant, maybe. Okay. When I would do the boxing shows, I would always have him come up to the house and give me a little trim, and today I... christened the new era by having my first haircut in about 4 months.
Outdoor haircuts. Let's talk, you know, let's real quick. I know we only got one segment together today. Let's talk about the broadcast partners that you worked with. If I threw a name like George Foreman at you, what would you tell me?
Well, I think that George, who is not just a former heavyweight champion, but he was a popular personality in the boxing world, and a guy who was kind of glib about boxing from the point of view of a fighter, and I enjoyed working with him. We had some differences of opinion because I was looking at it as a journalist and a fan, and he was looking at it as an expert former champion. And I liked working with him.
You know,
I found him to be smart about a lot of things.
Without a doubt, street smart, very intelligent, no doubt about that. But when I first met him in 67, he was a mean, and I keep saying mean for like 45 minutes. That's how mean he was, okay?
Well, and he thought that... that Sonny Liston was his model, that you had to be mean inside and outside the ring. He was. He carried that forward, and then he retired and came back, 10 years later, and was a different man. I've never seen somebody go through such a change as in life.
Like a metamorphosis almost. I mean, from a villain to a guy like a preacher and selling hamburgers on TV. All right, let's stick with athletes for a second. Ray Charles Leonard. You didn't know his name was Ray Charles Leonard until a few weeks ago, but what was Ray like to work with? I've been around Ray a lot. Ray's quite egotistical, I guess, as we are. All are.
I like being around Ray. I liked him a lot. And he had some issues learning his role when he was with us, but he's still a huge personality in the game. He still works fights now and then, and everybody just likes seeing him.
You know,
and sometimes even hearing him.
Yeah, you know, when I was training with him for the Thomas Hearns rematch in May of 1989 down in West Palm Beach, Florida, at least I was running with him and doing some gym work, but I was running with him, and we would run 3 miles, Godfather, and for 2.5 miles we were neck and neck, and then they would cut him loose for that last half mile, and you know, I swear, I'm telling the truth, it's a flat land, but I lost vision of him. That's how fast he was.
Well, Yep. He was one of a kind and certainly one of the best fighters of our lifetime.
Okay. Let's finish this off with my favorite guy, HBO's Ambassador of Goodwill for an Eternity. I'm talking about Harold Letterman. What was it like to work around Harold?
Well, Harold was a guy who just loved boxing. And he was enthusiastic about everything. And he brought that high-pitched voice that expressed his enthusiasm. And most importantly, over all the years he was with HBO, he saw the fights in a clear-eyed way. He trusted, as I used to say, he trusted his eyes. No matter what his opinion of the fighters or the fight going in, he called it as he saw it.
You know, it was such a personality. I don't know if I told you the story or not, but we were doing a fight up in Sacramento, California. I was doing the international, and you guys were doing the domestic. And afterwards, Harold had a limo out. There was a limo outside going to take Harold back to the hotel. And Harold's signing autographs, and the limo driver keeps looking at his watch. I noticed the limo driver keeps looking at his watch. He isn't saying nothing, but he keeps looking at his watch, and he's sort of letting Harold know that he's looking at his watch without saying anything, okay? So anyway, so the bottom line was, Harold tells the guy, guess what? Go take a ride. Harold, Pedro will take me back to the Radisson Hotel. And I did take him back to the Radisson Hotel, but he stood out there and signed autograph and took pictures, I would say for about an hour.
You know, Pedro, you'd be hard-put to find a guy who turned up before everybody else for hundreds, if not thousands, of prize fights. He was there when the first bell rang of the first fight, and he had been there for 15 minutes or a half hour talking to officials, and he was a real judge, as is his daughter, who is an excellent judge. Harold is one of a kind.
You know, I'll never forget his nickname in the New York Press. It was 721 Letterman. Do you remember that?
No, I didn't. Oh, you mean the scorecard?
Yeah, that's what Wally Matthews and Mike Marley and Phil Berger and those guys back in that era, they used to call him 721 Letterman. I kid you, that was a little nice nickname for him, but the bottom line is
like he had his own area code.
He had his own area code. You know, I loved him as I love you, and I want to wish you and the Godmom a very happy Sunday. You guys go out, do your thing. Of course, the restrictions are lifted, but I'm still wearing my mask, Godfather.
Well, so are we.
All the best.
And,
say hello to...
So did the barber who came up to do my hair today.
Lucky for the barber. Anyway, bottom line, you'll say hello to the Godmom. We'll talk next week.
You got it, Pedro.
The retired HBO Godfather himself, Mr. Larry Merchant, folks, on Sports Byline.
Harold Letterman, how'd you score the first three rounds?
Okay, Jim. I know that I can't do no wrong. And when I hold you in my arms, my love won't do you no harm. And I feel nice. That sugar is fine. I feel nice. That sugar is fine.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory eight count, and Foreman is as poised as can be.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The House historian Billo, Grandmaster Billo, tells me, of course, on June 15, 1984, I don't need to be reminded of this, Tommy the Hitman Hearns knocked out Roberto Duran, of course, in the second round. Duran coming in very unprepared when I saw him in April or May in Oakland at a hotel. Of course, that was a bit sad because he had this big tire around his waist. So I said to myself, how can he lose the weight and be ready by June? Well, he wasn't, and he got knocked out in two rounds. Bottom line is, Duran was stripped of the WBA title because he challenged for the WBC title and didn't face Mike McCallum. That would have been one hell of a fight. Roberto Duran and Mike McCallum, both in their primes, wow, at 154 pounds. But, of course, Duran was an ascending lightweight, 135-pounder, who was at one point in time ranked at 126. Some other fights, of course, June 17th, 1979, Danny Aiello stopped Mike Aiello, being, of course, the brother of Tony Aiello. Of course, those these guys were sort of bad news out of San Antonio, Texas. And when I say bad news, Tony Aiello was involved in it. he raped a couple girls, went to prison for that. And, of course, then he kicked that. I told you about him kicking that girl in the bathroom. I don't know what he was doing in the ladies' restroom of a San Antonio drive-in movie, but he was. And he kicked this girl in the spleen when she was on the ground in some type of beef, had a beef with the girl, kicked her in the spleen, ruptured her spleen. And Dan Duva, then the promoter of Main Event's monitor, of course, now Kathy Duva, his widow's taken over. The son of Dan Duva, Lou Duva, he paid these people off, and that's why it all went away as far as Tony Aiello was concerned. Of course, Aiello's career would essentially come to an end New Year's Eve 1983 when he raped his neighbor. Yeah, he was a nice guy. He raped his neighbor, and he stuffed his dirty sock in her mouth to shut her up and that kind of good stuff. He tortured her. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And of course, when he got out of prison, he begged to come on this show. So, you know, BB and the idiot that I am, I let him to come on the show because he came on the show and he sounded very apologetic and said he was clean and he didn't have any yearn for heroin anymore, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, his sexual appetite. Anyway, he went all through it. Like, he was like confessing, okay? Well, you know, like within 6 or 8 months, he was in trouble again for like messing with some girl that was, in his gym. Okay, and she was like underage. So the bottom line is Tony Aiello was a piece of work. And when he died from a heroin overdose, me and the cut man, we didn't shed no tears around here. Sorry, we just didn't. When Tony went, Tony went. Good riddance to Tony. Bottom line is Tony Aiello was a real piece of work. People said to me, you know, he could have been really a great fighter. No. Great fighters, no. I know there's a difference between fighters inside and outside of the ring. In other words, I can accept, or you have to accept, the behavior of some of these guys, even though I consider it somewhat deplorable. But as long as they're not committing crimes, you know, what can I really say? And at the end of the day, boxing has got its ugly faces to it. Danny Lopez. Man, Danny Lopez. Was he the most overrated fighter in the history of boxing? Think about that. They call him Little Red. And I mean, I watched him fight out of the Olympic Auditorium down here in L.A. Of course, Don Chargan built him up, but I never thought much of him. I thought he was a big catcher. I mean, he might as well have had a Rawlings. You know, Rawlings, they used to make baseball mitts, right? He should have had a Rawlings mitt just ensued into his face because that's all he did was catch. I mean, Salvador Sanchez, good Lord, that was domestic violence if there ever was. Man-on-man domestic violence, Salvador Sanchez. Not saying Sal was gay, but if Sal was gay, he would have been lumped up. I mean, he would have been busted and booked for domestic violence that he beat up on so bad. June 18, 1941, Joe Louis KOs Billy Connor in front of 54,000 people at the Polo Grounds. That's where the New York Giants, formerly the San Francisco Giants, New York Giants, baseball, played in the Polo Grounds. 54,000 people. Billy was ahead going into that 13th round. Of course, he said, I'm going to go for it. He wanted it because he was kicking Joe Louis's ass. He said, I'm going to go for it. And then he got drilled. Bottom line is, Billy Connor was a good fighter. I remember meeting him in the 80s somewhere. And I asked him if he really said what he said as far as about, I think he went back to Ireland for a little bit. And they asked him what he thought about Ireland. And he came up with that same line that I came up with about my grandmother leaving Arkansas. Thank God for the Greyhound is what I said, because we would have been stuck in Arkansas, my generation. Anyway, he said, thank God grandma didn't miss the boat. Talking about leaving Ireland and coming to the USA. But Billy Conn, a piece of work, a former light heavyweight champion. 13 rounds, of course, ahead after 12 rounds, going into that fateful 13th round, beating Joe Louis, and then, of course, got beat by Joe Louis. Rocky Marciano, June 17, 1954, The Rock. Yeah, I know he was a Rock, undefeated, 49-0. But, you know, he fought his brother a couple of times. I didn't tell you that. He fought his brother a couple of times. I had somebody on this show, I think it was his manager. I had his real manager, Rocky Marciano's manager. I can't remember the guy's name right now because I've been doing this a while. Anyway, but he was on the show and he said that Rock fought his brother a couple of times up in Brockton, in the Brockton area, fought his brother. So he fought his brother a couple of times. So he really wasn't 49-0 per se. I guess he was a little less than 49-0, but the bottom line is he retired 49-0, and that's what people look back at, and they say, you know, his accomplishment is 49-0. But again, I don't want to rain on this parade, but as heavyweight champion of the world, off the top of my head, I can tell you that the average age of his title defense opponents was 34.8 years. That's old, man. I mean, that's ancient, especially as far as heavyweights are concerned, and back in that day. So at the end of the day, I really didn't think a whole lot about his resume, but 49-0, of course, heralded as the, you know, the great white hope and the guy that got it done. The great white hope that got it done. I'm talking about Rocky Marcel, of course, beating Joe Louis in that non-title fight. That was pretty sad when he lumped up Joe like that. But then again, Joe had it coming because, you know, you don't get in the ring when you don't have it. And these guys get in the ring like they don't have it, think they're going to get some type of pass, like Muhammad Ali with Larry Holmes. He thought he was going to get some type of pass on October 2nd, 1980, my former sparring partner. Man, Larry lit him up. Larry could have really, really hurt him. But Larry could have really hurt him. I mean, Ali was just a punching bag. In other words, a guy you might as well wrote Everlast all over his body, because that's all he was that night in 1980. Caesar's Palace Outdoor Arena sold out, 15,000 people. Of course, me in tears to an extent. Me and Hector Martinez and John Lutz watching the decimation of Muhammad Ali at the hands of Larry Holmes. So if you don't have it and you're an old guy, man, you just shouldn't come back. I mean, history's proved it. History, I mean, do I need to say it? One old fighter, except George Foreman, ever came back and did anything super significant in the heavyweight division? Not too many guys. And of course, you know, George was smart. He fought Michael Moore. Michael Moore was a cocky dude. Michael, Double M was a weird dude. I'll tell you how weird Michael was. He was a gun freak. And when I saw him, when I went places with him, he had gun magazines. And I was an ex-cop, and I don't feel comfortable around guys with gun magazines. I don't care if they're black, white, blue, or green. You know, a plethora of gun magazines. All you want to do is read about guns. Why do you want to be, what's up with guns? Anyway, that was his hobby. So his hobby came home to haunt him at one point in time I think it was in Pennsylvania, when the local cops showed up at his door and said, you know what, we're taking you away because of all your guns. So, of course, he tried to defend himself to an extent, but they took care of that. Michael Moore, the former light heavyweight champion, moved up to heavyweight and, of course, got knocked out when George Foreman just suckered him. It was a sucker move. I've never seen a sucker move like that in my life. In other words, you let the guy do his thing. You can't do that in an amateur fight because you only got 3 rounds. Okay. But in a pro fight, you can let guys do their thing. Let the guys do their thing. Let them build up their confidence in that. Even though, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, I'm losing and I'm taking a licking, but I know what I'm going to do because I'm going to pull this move. Okay. And the move for Foreman was that uppercut. He was going to wait and lull Moore to sleep, let Moore cross with those left-hand crosses. Of course, Moore was a southpaw, a left-hander. He jabbed with his right hand, crossed with his left hand, and hooked with the right. Okay? But he didn't hook much against Foreman. So when he's throwing these shots, he thought he was throwing these straight shots. George just waited. Boom! Threw that uppercut. It was all over. And what's Michael Moore famous for, Scott Cuddy? Getting knocked out by an old man. I mean, that's it! I mean, Michael Moore, let him go back to Pennsylvania. I've seen him a couple of times since then. He hasn't been the confident guy he was beforehand. I mean, he wasn't the cocky. He was cocky as you know what. He just was. I mean, he was full of himself. More power to him. But you get knocked out by a 45-year-old man on television, and then people got YouTube and their phones and that kind of good stuff. Guess what, man? Don't look all that good. At the end of the day, Michael Moore, I don't think, belongs in the International Boxing Hall of Fame. People say to me, how can you say that, man? Well, yeah, he won titles at 175 and, of course, heavyweight. But at 175, he was, like, almost unstoppable. He was the World Boxing Organization, one of their first champions. He knocking guys out left and right. When I saw him some fight in Sacramento, California, I take that back. He was sparring in Sacramento, California against heavyweights like Lionel Butler and guys like that. He was just lighting these guys up. I was saying to myself, whoa, man, Mike has really got it. But deep down inside, Mike had some chinks in his armor, and most of them were mental. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, the Sunday 2-hour edition. I want to mention this. We're going to go back in time. And we'll bring in, of course, one of my favorite guys. He's passed away now. In fact, he passed in June of 2011. I'm talking about Mr. Hare himself. I'm talking about Nick Charles of CNN. We'll have Nick in depth in hour number 2 of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. But baby, if you didn't know it by now, what can I say?
comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent, sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check it. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome, of course, to the hour number one of two, of course, the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 7-11 a.m. Pacific time. Here on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio Channel 211, like a plethora of other internet platforms. Last night, of course, rocking and rolling, I'm talking about Cynthia Covello. Man, I like this little girl. She's little, and she's got a record, I think, of 9-2 now. But she's little, she's only 125 pounds, and she says maybe she wants to, like, lose weight and come down to 115. I don't know about that, but the bottom line is she looked good last night defeating Jessica Ai. Ai was slightly favored coming into this fight. The scorecards were at 49-46 twice. That means 4-1 in rounds and 48-47, 3-2 in rounds. In other words, if I was her and I saw that 3-2 score, I'd have been saying, what? I don't think so. Maybe I lost one round. Maybe I lost one round. Co-feature, Marvin Vettin beating Carl Robinson, submitted him. Marina could choke 4 minutes and 17 seconds into the very first round. Charles Rosa beat Kevin Aguilar. Andre Fidi beat Kevin Jordan. Charles Jordan, who was a last-minute replacement, on a split decision. Guy put up a good fight for coming in on like a week's notice. Jordan Espinoza beat Mark De La Rosa. Outside of that, who cares? I mean, a whole lot of nobodies, man. I'm tired. I don't want to watch nobodies. That's why I don't want, listen. Shakur Stevenson is an accomplished fighter. He's only got like 14 fights, but an accomplished fighter. The World Boxing Organization, who happens to be my sponsor, the World Boxing Organization 126-pound featherweight champion. So he's a talented guy, 2016 Olympic silver medalist. And like the guy he fought the other night, Mr. Carabello, came in at 13-1, and that's a formidable record. I mean, absolutely no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, you know, if he's not up to that talent level, it's going to be a mismatch, and it was a mismatch, and I really don't want to see Top Rank, how can I put this, infomercials. That's what these are going to turn out to be, it looks like. Top Rank infomercials on ESPN and ESPN Plus. So, Master Bob Arum down there on the plantation, that is Top Rank. Please listen to me, man. Put together some good fights. You've got mid-level fighters, good fighters, and upper echelon fighters where you could put together decent fights to where, you know, we don't have to look at a fight and say, what's the odds? What's the odds? 20-1. 20-1. That's where the odds, I kid you not. Those are some of the odds going down. We don't need to see 20-1 fights. It's like Shakur Stevenson and fights like that. I mean, boxing's back on TV, folks. And who's the guy fighting? Oh, Shakur Stevenson. Undefeated, silver medalist, 2016. Right on, man. Who's he fighting? Oh, this guy that's 13-1. Woo, 13-1. Oh, that sounds pretty good, don't you? A couple of draws, 9 KOs. Okay, sounds like he can fight a little bit. Yeah, but maybe not so much. And maybe he's not in his league, and he's not in his league. Because when he goes out there and drubs him, that's nothing. In other words, yeah, the guy's record and the numbers look good as far as the resume is concerned. But, you know, Carabello, to be honest, he'd have a problem licking a stamp if he wet his tongue. This is the way it is. I didn't think much of Mr. Carabello. So boxing, I think, needs to rock and roll. And, you know, I think that UFC is sort of like catching them with their pants down. And the reason why I brought that fight up is that Cynthia Covello really licked Jessica Ai last night. And I'm not saying that in a gay way, and neither of these women are gay, but Cynthia Covello beat Jessica Ai. She beat her. I mean, hands down. There's no doubt about it. But people say to me, you know, who cares about girls? If you watch that girl fight last night, you'd care a little bit. You would care a little bit. And the reason why I say that is she is an accomplished young lady. In other words, she really doesn't have she has her own style. That's the best way to put it. She can do takedowns. She can stand up. She can ground and pound. She's a little tiny chick. I mean, she really is. I mean, Jessica Ai was much, much bigger than her. At the end of the day, it was an accomplished win for Cynthia Covello. And at the end of the day, I was happy that she won because she's just, you know, when you see these small little girls and these small fighters, negate somebody else's reach. I wasn't all that good at that except overpowering people. But other people like Roberto Duran and Cynthia Covello and people like that, they can do it from the outside. They can counter perfectly from a distance. I couldn't. I had to step up into somebody's face. I just couldn't do it from a distance. So more power to people like that. No doubt about that. Now, the UFC is rocking and rolling. Of course, you know, they've got their issues, and Jorge Masvidal is the latest guy, of course, to talk smack and about the pay structure. And, of course, I've talked about this for the longest now. And some of you are going to say, oh, no, here he goes. He's going to talk about Dana pimping again. Yes, I am going to talk about Dana pimping again because Jorge Masvidal, the fool that he is, recently signed a deal with the UFC, and now he wants more money. Well, you know, you sort of don't ask for more money right after you sign the real deal. Then you look at the fact that, you know, he sold out Madison Square Garden his last time, did numbers on pay-per-view that hadn't been done in a while. So he has great, great pay-per-view numbers, him and Nate Diaz. Of course, they want to talk about doing that fight again. But they wanted him to fight the champion. And, you know, I got to tell you, maybe not. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, a fighter should be able to call his shots. In the UFC, you can't call your shots. Here's Dana White being grilled on the money fighters get after last night's card.
As we know, Jorge Masvidal and Dana White have recently been going back and forth in a public dispute with regards to how much Masvidal deserves to be paid by the UFC. This week, Masvidal also turned down a welterweight title fight with Kamaru Usman in the main event of UFC 251 on Fight Island. As a result, the title fight was passed on to Gilbert Burns. Masvidal did give his reactions to the Usman vs. Burns title fight. On his Instagram story, Masvidal shared this tweet from NFL player John Feliciano with the hashtag SuperNecessary. The tweet says, I won't be buying UFC 251. Don't let the UFC lowball their fighters. They're spitting in the face of their top-level fighters like Jorge Masvidal. Imagine what they're doing to the up-and-coming fighters. Masvidal also sent a message to the fans on Twitter and said, thank you for the overwhelming amount of love that I have received for the stance I have taken against my employer. From the blue-collar worker to the street hustlers to the rich kids and everything in between, thank you so much for your words of encouragement and God bless. Last night during the UFC Vegas media scrum, Dana White gave his thoughts on the situation with Jorge Masvidal and the recent criticism surrounding UFC fighter pay.
Massive card with the pay-per-view. I think the only surprise was that Gilbert Burns was in there instead of Jorge Masvidal. We understand where Masvidal has been at, but I guess can you just talk about having to make that
decision? Surprise. I mean, this is what we do. I mean, we've been doing this for 20 years. People who want to fight get fights, and people who don't, don't. And he's the number one ranked guy in the world. Number one versus the champion. And this kid wants to stay busy, you know. These kids that come out and go on runs like Burns is on and want to keep fighting and stay active, they're healthy, and they want to. It's the smartest thing you could do, you know. And it doesn't surprise me that Masvidal, you know, Masvidal is very much like the Diaz brothers, you know. He beats to the, you know, sound of his own drum. When he wants to do something, he does it, and it's not very surprising at all.
So any alternate plans for Masvidal right now, or is it just kind of a wait and see and let him come to you?
Yeah. Listen, I'm putting on fights every weekend for the next 10 years, all right? And if you want to fight, call us. We'll offer you fights, and if you don't want to take them, you don't have to. It's always been that way. Everybody's acting like this is like some new drama that just popped up, and this has never happened before in the history of the sport. This happens all the time, nonstop.
Fighter pay has been a big discussion. You got grilled on ESPN, all those things. I'm curious. I mean, you've laid out the scenarios with these individual fighters, but is there room for a bigger discussion? You know, can there be greater revenue? That sort of thing?
Again, like the thing that I went through with Kevin the other day. I went through this with Kevin the other day. This isn't new either. There's a lot of new people covering us. There's a lot of new people that don't know a lot about the sport. That's new. This isn't new. This is the same old. And all these fighters that are, you know, they share in the revenue. They do share in the revenue. They have the upside in the pay-per-view, you know. And guys that sell pay-per-view make a lot of money.
I'm looking through the window, and Scott Cuddy's jaw was hanging there when Dana White said these guys are making money. They're making, yeah, wait a minute. John Jones is making money. Khabib is making money, okay? The lower guys, the lesser guys are not making money. They're getting $4,000 sometimes. Or maybe, well, get this. If you fight and you get a $4,000 purse or a $16,000 purse, even, let's go the upside of that one. Let's say you get a $16,000 purse and you fight twice a year in the UFC. So you've got $32,000 coming in there, right? Of course, that's gross, right? And then you've got to pay your manager and he's going to take probably 20% to a third, right? And you've got your trainer who's going to take a 10% cut. Then you've got your cut man, you maybe give him 2 or 3%. In other words, what are you down to? You know what I'm saying? There's, after that 32 grand, if you're a UFC fighter and you're signed to the company, they've got no health plan. They're not giving you no health plan. They're worse than Vince McMahon when it comes to the independent contractor stuff. I mean, good Lord. I mean, you tell these guys they've got to change their name and they've got to do exactly this and do that and they're independent contractors. Sounds to me like they're employees and you're telling them what to do, okay? Of course, the USC, they may be independent contractors, okay, because they're fighters and they're not actors, much like the WWE is. But at the end of the day, they're vastly underpaid. I mean, if Dana White's willing to cop, I heard him cop this week, to 18%. The USC said, the question was like this. Is it true the fighters are getting 18%? He goes, I won't argue with you on the 18%. In other words, he wasn't arguing with the 18%. In other words, it could be 18% and it could be still a lot lower. I had it at 8 to 12% when the Zuffa Sports, Zuffa company, of course, Zuffa Sports being the government of Dubai, who owned 12% of the USC. The USC, Frank Fertitta and Lorenzo Fertitta, the owners of the Station and Palace Casinos in Las Vegas, Nevada. And of course, the aforementioned Dana White. El Pimpo Gringo. Anyway, he has 10%. He had 10% of the USC before they sold it for $4.2 billion. And need I remind you that Scott Cuddy, the mathematician, the accountant that he is, told me that $4.2 billion is $4,200 million. Holy cow. That's what Cuddy's got in the bank. But no, I mean, that's what they paid for this thing. So more power to them. Anyway, the fighters are not sharing in the money, as you just heard Dana White say. John Jones has got a $5 million deal per fight. At least that's what he's alluded to as far as his ESPN and his recent performances, are concerned. So he's getting some money. There's no doubt about it. But what about the rest of the guys? I said, you're fighting twice a year and you're going to get maybe out of that 32 grand, maybe you're going to get, maybe you're going to get $18,000 or $19,000, and then you've got to declare that for taxes. But can you live on $18,000 or $19,000 a year? And guess what? You're not being put in, you know, fights that you can win easily. You're being put in death match after death match. So what I'm trying to tell you is the system, the UFC system, is meant for you not to succeed. If you're a fighter, the UFC system is meant to break you. I mean, death match after death match after death match. People say to me, well, there are exceptions to the rule. Daniel Cormier, former light heavyweight champion, couldn't beat John Jones, but he beat just about everybody else. He couldn't beat Jones, but he could beat Stipe Miocic for the world heavyweight title. Of course, he came back and lost that heavyweight title. Now they want to do it again, I believe, in July or August, as far as his trilogy is concerned. I don't know. Who really wants to see that fight again? I mean, what does Daniel Cormier really bring to the dance? I guess as far as the UFC is concerned, he's a company fighter. He's a Yezza boss. Mazza Dana. I mean, that's what he's all about. You hear him on TV. I mean, that guy, Jesus Christ, is his hemorrhoid face. I mean, that's how much he's kissing ass. Hemorrhoid face. That's how Dan, I've interviewed him in the past. I mean, he's been in this studio. He signed the walls outside here at the Sports Byline Studios, and there's respect for him as a fighter. But, you know, when you slide into that microphone position behind the mic as far as the UFC is concerned, and the UFC is, they're really controlled. I mean, they control what they say. I mean, it's sort of like, as I said, Massa Dana in the plantation. This is sort of like the WWE plantation. You remember I talked about that many times. Everything that goes out on TV as far as the World Wrestling Entertainment folks are concerned, it's scripted and written by Vince McMahon. In other words, when you see Joe Blow out there saying, you know, I'm the best guy in the entire world, guess what? Vince McMahon wrote and approved that. It wasn't even original. They're killing it. Dana White, control, killing it. Dana White, the biggest pimp in boxing, the biggest pimp in MMA. Yeah, he's getting into boxing as well. Keep him out of boxing. Let him stay in the world of the UFC. You're tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide.
This is real. He can push me now, but come when we get into the octagon, I'm going to smash this dude. He hates getting punched in the face. I'm going to punch him over and over and over.
Feel so bad, go out and love someone. This finish
now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm sorry for anyone I let down with this performance. I promise you I wanted this more than anything.
Sounds like he's crying. Bottom line is you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look in the world of boxing, MMA. Check the clocks, 57 minutes past the hour. This is hour number one of two, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite, of course, channel 211, the Dan Patrick channel, like 1,000 other internet platforms. Straight up, this is hour number one. Hour number two is forthcoming, upcoming on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Of course, coming to you live from the City by the Bay. We'll talk about combat sports. We'll continue this conversation, but we'll bring in Joe Frazier. We'll bring in Joe, George Foreman, Ron Lyle, some of my favorite guys. In fact, you get these guys together. And although Joe and I went back and forth and rumbled a couple times because, you know, Joe would get drunk. And when he got drunk, I didn't like taking smack from anybody. I don't care if it was Joe Frazier or not, man. You're not going to disrespect me, you know, or make me act like a fool because you've had a few drinks. I'm going to tell it like it is. Anyway, bottom line is we'll spend a little time talking about Joe Frazier. Of course, the Ali controversy, him and back and forth, how Ali instilled, made him hate him. But he didn't, it was all for the money. It wasn't personal. He never got that. Bottom line is George Foreman will be here as well. Of course, Foreman and I go back to 1967. I remember watching him in the gym at Newman's Gym here at 312 Leavenworth Street in the Tenderloin here in San Francisco. My father brought me down there and he told me this guy won the Golden Gloves or something like that. He won the Golden Gloves. I didn't know what the Golden Gloves were. 1960, I didn't know what the Golden Gloves were. Anyway, I would win four later, but I didn't know what it was. So Dad tells me he won the Golden Gloves. He's going to win the Olympics. And I said to myself, what the hell is the Olympics? I didn't know. So in 1968, I learned all about the Olympics and amateur boxing and amateur sports and all that kind of good stuff with my friend Lou Garcia down there in Pacifica, California. May he rest in peace. But the bottom line is, I talk history, I talk USC, I talk a whole lot of stuff in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide here on Sports Byline. Stay tuned for Ring Talk Live Worldwide.